Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text 12. Parikshit Rajarshe Janma Karma Balvanam Samstam Japanda Pranam Bhakshe Krishna Katodayam. Sita Goswami thus addressed the rishis headed by Shonaka. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of Lord Sri Krishna and topics of the birth, activities, and deliverance of King Parikshit, the sage amongst kings, as well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu, purport. Lord Krishna is so kind to the fallen souls that he personally incarnates himself amongst the different kinds of living entities and takes part with them in daily activities. Any historical fact, old or new, which has a connection with the activities of the Lord is to be understood as a transcendental narration of the Lord. Without Krishna, all the supplementary literatures like the Puranas and Mahabharata are simply stories or historical facts. But with Krishna, they become transcendental, and when we hear of them, we at once become transcendentally related with the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam is also a Purana, but the special significance of this Purana is that the activities of the Lord are central and not just supplementary historical facts. Srimad Bhagavatam is thus recommended by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the spotless Purana. There is a class of less intelligent devotees of the Bhagavad Purana who desire to relish at once the activities of the Lord narrated in the 10th canto without first understanding the primary canto. They are under the false impression that the other cantos are not concerned with Krishna. And thus, more foolishly than intelligently, they take to the reading of the 10th canto. These readers are specifically told herein that the other cantos of the Bhagavatam are as important as the 10th canto. No one should try to go into the matters of the 10th canto without having thoroughly understood the purport of the other 9 cantos. Krishna and his pure devotees, like the Pandavas, are on the same plane. Krishna is not without his devotees of all the rasas, and the pure devotees, like the Pandavas, are not without Krishna. The devotees and the Lord are interlinked, and they cannot be separated. Therefore, talks about them are all Krishna Katha, or topics of the Lord. Om Jnanati Nirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupakadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyashta Vipashundu Vayevacha Patitanam Pav. So, this is Sutta Goswami addressing the rishis headed by Shonaka, and he's answering Shonaka Rishi's next inquiry, which was about Maharaj Prickett. I think if you remember, at the beginning of the 4th chapter, the sages of Namasharanya expressed great happiness and enlivenment by Sutta Goswami's answer to their question, now that Krishna has left the planet, where will knowledge and religion be presently protected? And the answer was the Srimad Bhagavatam. The answer was the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sutta Goswami said, and I was there when the Bhagavatam was spoken by Sukadev tomorrow. How long was that all? So, when Sutta Goswami said that I heard and realized the Srimad Bhagavatam, then the sages of Namasharanya asked about its speakers and hearers. So the first question they asked was concerning Vyas and how he became inspired to write the Srimad Bhagavatam. Second question they asked was about Sukadeva Goswami And the third question was about Maharaj Prigat. So the question about how Vyasa became inspired began, Sutta Goswami began answering it in the middle of the fourth chapter, and his answer to that question, or his story of how Vyasa became inspired, just finished now at the beginning of the seventh chapter with, well, the result of Vyasadeva being inspired by Narada Muni's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, by the narration of his own life, of Narada Muni's own life, by Vyasadeva's meditation. And that was described here. Remember at the very beginning of this chapter, I think it was the sages of Namisharanya, after they heard, after the sage of Namisharanya heard how Narada inspired Vyasadeva and then departed after he told the story of his life and how he received the spiritual body and instructed him on the Srimad Bhagavatam, then Narada departed. And then at the beginning of this seventh chapter, the sages of Namisharanya asked Sutta Goswami, so what did he do after his departure? And therefore Sutta Goswami explained how Vyasadeva went into trance and envisioned the absolute truth. And then after envisioning the absolute truth, he taught it to his son Sukadeva Goswami. And with discussion about Sukadeva Goswami's elevated position, that he was an Atmarama fully satisfied, but yet was captivated by the descriptions of Krishna's qualities in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that also partly answered the second question about Sukadeva Goswami. And now Sutta Goswami is going to begin his narration concerning the birth and activities of King Parikshit, because that was the last inquiry that the sages of Namisharanya asked about the speakers and hearers of the Srimad Bhagavatam. They asked about Maharaj Prigat, and they wanted to know about his wonderful life. You wanted to ask a question? Okay, now the interesting thing about this is that Sutta Goswami explains that I'll begin the transcendental narration of Lord Krishna and by explaining about the activities of Maharaj Parikshit. It says, Krishna Katha Udayam. That he'll speak about the Pandavas, but it's that which gives rise to Krishna Katha. See, therefore, talks about them are all Krishna Katha are topics of the Lord. When you talk about the devotees of the Lord, you're talking Krishna Katha. Because you cannot separate a devotee from Krishna. A devotee is simply thinking, feeling, and willing about Krishna. A devotee is never separated from Krishna. Krishna is in his heart. A devotee is always looking at the object of his love, with it, which is Krishna. So you cannot discuss a devotee separately from discussing Krishna. So therefore, this is also Krishna Katha. Prabhupada wants to point out in the purport that some people exclude these pastimes of Krishna, which are not the pastimes of the 10th canto about Vrindavan. The Prabhupada says that these are also Krishna Katha. They're also discussions of Krishna. And that's confirmed by Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami says some people say there's rasa in the Bhagavatam. Rasa is intensified and perfected affection for Krishna. But Jiva Goswami says, no, you can't say that. You have to say that the Bhagavatam is composed of rasa. Everything in the Srimad Bhagavatam, every sentence, every word is rasa, is intensified affection. Because every word in the Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken by a devotee. And therefore every word is enriched with intensified affection for Krishna. So now the stories of the Pandavas will be presented, which, although historical facts are understood as a transcendental narration of the Lord, They become transcendental because they're also concerned with Krishna. And now the history of Maharaj Prickett continues to the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we'll also see his interaction at the end of his life with Sukadeva Goswami. So we will go on.
Yadamade Koravasrinjayanam Vareshvato Viragatim Gateshu Vikodarabhidha Kadabhimarsha Begno Rudande Ditarastra Putre Vartu Priyam Dronir Itisma Pasyan Krishna Sutanam Swapatam Shiramsi Upaharad Viprayam Evatasya Jagupsitam Karma Vigarayanti.
Translation. When the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their deserved destination, and when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being beaten by the club of Bhimasena, the son of Dronacharya, Ashvatthama, beheaded the five sleeping sons of Draupadi and delivered them as a prize to his master. Foolishly thinking that he would be pleased, Duryodhana, however, disapproved of the heinous act, which he was not pleased in the least. So Prabhupada continues about how these topics of Krishna, even though it's a war, it's about a war, it's Krishna Katha. Transcendental topics of the activities of Lord Sri Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam begin from the battlefield of Kurukshetra, where the Lord himself spoke about himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, both the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendental topics of Krishna. So the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita is spoken in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the Srimad Bhagavatam begins actually from the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, because it begins with the story of Maharaj Prickett being enlightened and his birth. His story begins in the womb of his mother on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So really the story of the Bhagavatam, which the Bhagavatam means Krishna is appearing in Kali Yuga in the form of his message. That message was manifest to Maharaj Prickett. So the story of the Bhagavatam begins with the birth of Maharaj Prickett. It begins before the birth of Maharaj Prickett. It begins on the battlefield when he's in the womb of his mother. Because all the other descendants of the Yadu dynasty, or of the Pandavas, Kuru dynasty actually, they're all killed on the battlefield of the Kurukshetra. And the last ones are killed by Ashvatthama, who beheads the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, who is the wife of the Pandavas. So the last remaining member is the Abhimanyu, who is the son of Arjuna. Abhimanyu is killed also before in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. But his wife, Uttara, who's carrying Maharaj Prickett, is still alive. So the only really remaining member of this dynasty from the Pandavas, the Kuru dynasty, the Pandavas, is Maharaj Prickett, who is in the womb of his mother. He's the only remaining one. And we're going to be discussing his birth. So it actually begins here, where the drama is set. When all the sons of Draupadi are killed, the focus becomes on Maharaj Prickett. Even from this verse, even though it's not mentioned, the focus becomes on Maharaj Prickett, who's in the womb of his mother, because he's the last remaining person in the dynasty. Prabhupada discusses nice that this is Krishna Katha, about Krishna, and it begins here. And Lord Chaitanya wanted everyone to be informed of both Krishna Kathas by his order. Bhagavad Gita, which is spoken by Krishna, and the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is spoken about Krishna. Lord Krishna Chaitanya is Krishna himself in the garb, and he wanted these versions of Lord Krishna. He wanted them spoken. He desired that this is Lord Chaitanya's mission, that Krishna Katha is spread all over the world. And here's where it begins. Text 15. Matashunam nidanam sutanam nisham yagoram pratitapyamana tadarudadvaspa kulakulakshi tamshan vayanyaha karitamali. Draupadi, the mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing of the massacre of her sons, began to cry in distress with eyes full of tears. Trying to pacify her in her great loss, Arjuna spoke to her thus. Tada suchaste pramrajami badre yadrama bando shira attatayana kandiva muktai vishakai upahare tvakramya yatsnasyasi dagdaputra. O gentle lady, when I present you with the head of that brahmana, after beheading him with arrows from my Gandiva bow, I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. Then after burning your son's body, you can take bath standing on his head. So Arjuna wants to kill him, but he's a Brahmin. But here it says Brahma Bandho. Brahma Bandho means degraded Brahmin. Literally, it means the friend of a Brahmin. Or if someone's born in a Brahmin family, but he's not acting like a Brahmin, then he's called a Brahma Bandhu. He's a friend of a Brahmin. And therefore, and how is he not acting like a Brahmin? Because he's an aggressor. And in Shastra it says, an enemy who sets fire to the house, administers poison, attacks all of a sudden with deadly weapons, plunders wealth, or usurps agricultural fields, or entices one's wife, is called an aggressor. Such an aggressor, though he be a Brahmin or a so-called son of a Brahmin, has to be punished. And therefore Arjuna promises like this. Iti priyam valgu vachitva jalpai sasantva yitva chita mitva suta anvadravadam sita ugradanva kapidvajo guru putram ratena. Arjuna, who is guided by the infallible Lord as friend and driver, thus satisfied the dear lady by such statements. Then he dressed in armor and armed himself with furious weapons, and getting into his chariot, he set out to follow Ashvatthama, the son of his martial teacher. Tamapatantam sivalakshadurat kumarahodvignamanaratena paradravat prana paripsa urvyam yavad yaman rudra bayadyataka. Ashvatthama, the murderer of the princess, seeing from a great distance Arjuna coming at him with great speed, fled in his chariot, panic-stricken, just to save his life, as Brahma fled in fear from Shiva. So we get the image of Ashvatthama like running from his life, seeing Arjuna, who Aurya says that he took up his special bow, the Gandiva bow. He was the greatest warrior, and Ashvatthama, who's the son of Dronacharya, who's Arjuna's guru, his military guru. And Arjuna was his prized pupil. But he's running for his life, just as Brahma ran in fear of Lord Shiva. So the word here is given ka, and I guess by the Sanskrit it also can be arka. So Brahma or Surya, because Brahma became a lord by his daughter and began to follow, which infuriated Shiva, who attacked Brahma, and Brahma fled in fear of his life. And there's another reference, if you take the word as arka, in the Vamana Purana, there was a demon by the name Vidyamali who had a golden airplane, which was so effulgent and night disappeared because it was effulgent like the sun, and the sun god became angry and melted his plane, which enraged Lord Shiva. This is the score. And then Lord Shiva attacked the sun god, and the sun god began to run because he became envious. So anyway, it's mentioned in the purport. But in both cases, Lord Shiva, they're running from Lord Shiva. So this is the image of their fear. Yada sharanam atmanam aikshita shantavajinam astram brahma shiromene atmatranam vijatmaja. When the son of the Brahmin, Ashvatthama, saw that his horses were tired, he considered that there was no alternative for protection outside of his using the ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra, nuclear weapon. So it's described Brahma Shiro. Brahma means the head of Brahma, or the topmost or ultimate weapon. So he releases, Ashvatthama doesn't know what to do, he's fierce for his life. So he releases this weapon. So this decision, Prabhupada says, is immature, not proper for him to, and therefore he's called Dvijitatma. So here, the same word, Brahmabandhu means the friend of a Brahmin, Dvijitatma means the son of a Brahmin. It means his qualification is by birth, hereditary, not by qualification, because he's not qualified as a Brahmin because of what he did. I just always remember the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion when Srila Prabhupada says, at the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada says that when you become a Vaishnava, you become better than a Goswami. But if you no longer follow the principles of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada says, you can't still say you're better than a Goswami. So everything is on the basis of qualification. And the person who's in the goodness and is at the state of goodness and most intelligent, he's called a Brahmin. Being a friend or a son of a Brahmin does not make one a Brahmin. So therefore he's called here Dvijatma. Dvijatmaja. Excuse me, Dvijatma. Ato paspriśya salinam sandade tatsamadita ajananapi samharam prana kritcha upastate. Since his life was in danger, he touched water in sanctity and concentrated upon the chanting of hymns for throwing nuclear weapons, although he did not know how to withdraw such weapons. So this meant he didn't have full qualification, because he didn't know how to withdraw it. Tata pradushkritam teja panchandam sarvato disham pranapadam abhipreksha vishnum jishnur uvachaha. Thereupon a glaring light spread in all directions. It was so fierce that Arjuna thought his own life in danger, so he began to address Lord Krishna. Arjuna uvacha, Krishna Krishna Mahabaho Bhaktanam Abhayankara Tameko Dayamananam Apavargo Sisamstrate. Translation, Arjuna said, O my Lord Sri Krishna, you are the almighty personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. Therefore, only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Everyone in the flames of material miseries can find the path of liberation in you only. So Arjuna sees complete devastation. This Brahmastra weapon, Prabhupada describes later, it's more powerful than the atomic bomb, because the atomic bomb can only destroy a planet, and the Brahmastra is like the fire at the fire of devastation at the end of the world. So here, he calls out to Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Usually it's a defect to repeat something twice, except in either great enthusiasm or great fear. Krishna Krishna Mahabaho Bhaktanam, you instill fearlessness into your devotees. Because Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Dhanapran. Krishna is the mother, Krishna is the father, Krishna is the Lord of life, Krishna is the ultimate protector. The fact is that Krishna is protecting he's the supreme controller. When Prabhupada says in the purport, what really makes you fearless is when transcendental knowledge is injected into your heart. So when you have transcendental knowledge, what do you see? You see Krishna is absolute and good. Therefore, whatever happens, you cannot control, but it's also good, and therefore you're not fearful. Even if it appears that your life is being threatened or your material circumstances change, when Krishna instills within your heart transcendental knowledge, then you realize that he is always protecting you. Konti aprita janahi name bhakta pranashtiti. Krishna told Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, declare it boldly, my devotees will never vanquish. So when one has some knowledge and understanding of reality by the mercy of Krishna, then he has no fear. Because fear is the illusion that something is separate from Krishna and therefore beyond his control. So when you don't have faith in God and you have a materialistic temperament, then you're always in anxiety because the destiny appears to be happening without any sense or direction. And therefore, you know, at any moment, anything can happen to you. But as soon as you come under Krishna's, as soon as you surrender to Krishna, then you experience, one of the six qualities of surrender is that you experience that Krishna is the maintainer, you experience that Krishna is the protector. I described before the example, just like the cat, the jaws of a cat, the mouse is fearful. But the same jaws, the kitten, because the cat holds the kitten by the neck, is feeling protected. So similarly, the devotee has that vision. The materialist is in the jaws of Kala or time, and the devotee is in the jaws of Kala or time, and Kala is Krishna, his representation in the material world. But the devotee feels protected. Because whatever happens to him, he's confident it is for his good. So therefore, bhaktanam abhayankara, he's feeling protected. And he said, you're competent to instill fearlessness because everyone is in the flames of material miseries and find the path of liberation here. So he's taking shelter of Krishna. Now another thing that's interesting here is, where do we see Krishna? Krishna's on the chariot. He's the driver of Arjuna. So I made a note that both the first time we see Krishna, both in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is as the chariot driver of Arjuna in a very materially low position. Especially when you're in India, no respectable man drives his own car. The driver is not a very respectable condition. One is taking the position of driver because of the condition of his heart and the modes of material nature. But Krishna is not taking the position of driver because of anything that's in his heart. He's doing it out of love for his devotee. Because Krishna I mentioned this before, the greatness of a person is not his position, but his personality. You can have a person who's very powerful, but be a dictator. The greatness of a personality is his ability to exchange in relationships. In other words, to reciprocate in love. So Krishna is the supreme person because He's the most wonderful person in exchanging and reciprocating loving dealings with others. That is his supremacy. Even Prabhupada gives the example of a person who goes to the high court. When he goes to the high court, he's the judge. But that's not his greatness. His greatness is not as the judge. Actually, his position as the judge is very limited, because it's limited how much he can reveal his personality. When he's at home, then his loving sentiments is the most wonderful friend manifest. His sentiments is the most wonderful lover manifest, as the most, and his parents come, and he's such an obedient and wonderful child. So that's the supremacy. The greatness of someone is in his personality, his ability to exchange love. Therefore it says, rasa vai sahi, that the absolute truth is that love, is that rasa, is that intensified affection. And Krishna is Raja Shekhar, or Rasika Shekhar. He's Rasaraj. He's the king of exchanging love and affection. That's his ultimate position. And therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we first see Krishna in his supreme position as the most wonderful exchanger of love, that he has so much affection for his devotee that he will even become their subordinate and serve them. So seeing Krishna on the chariot in both the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is actually indicating his supreme position as exchanger of loving relationships with his devotees. This is a very, very wonderful thing. But because he's in that position, which is low as the driver, therefore Arjuna, so that we shouldn't think there's something in Krishna's heart, Arjuna will now begin to offer prayers to establish Krishna's position. Are there any questions? There's no questions. Okay, it's just because I'm going to have to end here, and the rest of the class will continue, for those who are listening to tape, on the other side of the tape, because of some technical difficulty with the rest of the side of this tape. It will continue on the other side of the tape. We see that Ashwatthama has killed the five remaining sons of Draupadi, which means he has practically wiped out the Kuru dynasty, with the exception of Maharaj Prickett, who is in the womb of Uttara, the wife of Abhimanyu. Anyway, we saw that Arjuna became furious that Ashwatthama has done this, and even though he was a Brahmin and the son of his teacher, he went to kill him, and Ashwatthama, in fear, released the Brahmastra weapon. It's like a nuclear weapon. And then Arjuna seized this power. The Brahmastra weapon is compared to the fire of devastation. While the nuclear weapon can destroy one planet, the Brahmastra weapon can destroy, like, the universe, cosmic crash. So it's very terrifying. So Arjuna, in this verse here, text 22, takes shelter of Krishna. And the word is very nice, bhaktanam abhayankara, that he can eradicate the fears of the devotees, because the devotee can become fearless because Krishna is the only shelter and protector, especially of his devotee. Just like a child who's dependent on his parents, then naturally when a child is dependent on his parents, when the child is dependent on his parents, then, you've got to watch that. When the child is dependent on his parents, when a child is dependent on his parents, then the parents give him attention and care. So So devotee is one who takes shelter of Krishna. He's dependent on Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates and protects his devotees. And because he's the supreme controller, then the devotee is not fearful in any circumstance. So Krishna instills this. He's competent to instill this fearlessness in the hearts of the devotees because he is competent of giving shelter and protection. And he's actually the only one competent to give shelter and protection. And then Arjuna, therefore, is taking shelter of Krishna. And what Arjuna says also is everyone in the flames of material miseries can find the path of liberation in you only. Liberation, again, the word is upavarga, to be free from material distresses, only in the shelter of Krishna. This is general material. In other words, what Arjuna is going through, the brahmastra, it's actually a general material condition. The flames of material existence. Just like you may die of cancer. For you, that's a holocaust. And everyone has to die anyway. It's a holocaust. Anyway, this was a holocaust. And Arjuna was taking shelter of Krishna, who was the chariot driver. Because he was in the position of the chariot driver, therefore Arjuna is going to offer prayers to show Krishna's position so that we understand that Krishna taking the job of the chariot driver is not a condition of his heart. In other words, it's not due to the impure heart, it's due to his pure heart. He's doing it out of love for his devotees, not because that's his position according to the modes of material nature. Prabhupada in the purport also talks about this fearfulness which can be extinguished by the spiritual master. If you're burning in the flames of material existence, you may receive the mercy of the Lord through the transparent medium of the realized spiritual master. The spiritual master, by his words, can penetrate into the heart of the suffering person and inject transcendental knowledge, which alone can extinguish the fire of material existence. Samsara dava nalalida loka tanaya karuna ganaganatvam praptasya kalyana gunarnavasya vande gurusi charanaravindam. Text 3. Tvamadya purusha sakshad ishvara prakrite para mayam vyudasya chitchaktya kavalye stitta atmani. You are the original personality of Godhead who expands himself all over creation and is transcendental to material energy. You've cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You always situate in internal bliss and transcendental knowledge. So this tvam adya, you are the original. That means Swayam Bhagavan. He's looking at Krishna. You are Swayam Bhagavan. Everything else is coming from Krishna. And he's transcendental. He's Ishvara. Prakriti para. He's para or supreme to prakriti of the material energy. He's not subjected by the material energy. Even though he's taking the position of a driver. He's taking the position of the driver out of his own will to serve his devotee. And that is showing his supremacy. It says he casts away the effects of material energy by dint of his spiritual potency. Because it's under the control of Krishna, it can be cast. Krishna is far above the material energy. He is not here as we are here. And in the purport, Prabhupada quotes that verse I spoke to before, Daivyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Dharati. That material energy is difficult. It's Krishna's energy. Even though so it's so stringent, it's Krishna's energy. And therefore, when we surrender to him, he can remove it. Text 24.
sa eva jiva lokasya maya mohita cetasa vidatse svena viryena shreyo dharmadi lakshanam.
And yet, though you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation characterized by religion and so on for the ultimate good of the conditioned soul. So the Lord comes to give religion. Even though he's beyond the purview, even though he's transcendental to the material energy, he comes to give the religious principles. The Lord descends. He's coming here by his own will. Ajopi san avyatma bhutanam ishvaropi sa prakritim swam adishtaya sambhava yapamaya. By his own energy. By his own energy he's coming. He comes because of his will and his purpose. We don't come into this world by our will or purpose. We're forced to come to this world. Text 25.
Tatayam chavataraste bhuvo bara chahirshaya swanam chananya bhavanam anudyanaya chasukrit.
Thus you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are exclusive devotees and are wrapped in meditation upon you. So this is a better process than mentioned. He not only comes to give dharma, but he comes, what does it say here? Chananya bhavanam. For exclusive his devotees, swanam, and his friends. You descend to remove the burden of the world, but especially those who you're, and to benefit your friends, especially those your exclusive devotees and wrapped in meditation to you. Especially for the devotees he comes. Not to just establish religious principles. Because he can do that in other ways. Pritanaya sadhunam vinashaya tradishkitam. He comes to protect the sadhus and annihilate the miscreants and establish religious principles. He can do that in other ways. But he especially comes for the devotees so that they can meditate on him and become purified so that we can meditate on him now. He especially comes for that purpose. And Prabhupada said it appears that he's partial to his devotees. He's not partial, it's natural. But he's a person, therefore he reciprocates the surrender and dependence of his devotees. These are prayers by Arjuna.
Kimidam svitkatubeti deva deva lavedyaham sarvato mukamayati teja paramadarunam.
O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand it. So the purport Prabhupada said, anything that is presented before the personality of Godhead should be done after due presentation of respectful of prayers. So before he asked anything, he offered prayers.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Vetedam Dronaputrasya Brahmanastram Pradarshanam Navaisau Veda Samharam Pranabhadha Upastate.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, know from me that this is the act of the son of Drona. He has thrown the hymns of nuclear energy, Brahmastra, and he does not know how to retract the glare. He has helplessly done this, being afraid of imminent death. So, this is generally considered infallible, but so is the Lord. So the Krishna is going to explain how to counteract it. Again, this shows the immaturity of Ashvatthama. Even though he's a son of a Brahmin, he made so many mistakes. and therefore not worthy of such a title.
Vyasyanyantamam kinchit astram pratyavakarshanam jayastrateja unadham astrago yastratejasa.
So Krishna explains how to counteract it. Oh Arjuna, only another Brahmastra can counteract this weapon. Since you are expert in military science, subdue this weapon's glare with the power of your own weapon.
Sutta uvacha shrutva bhagavata proktam valguna paraviraha shvishvapastam parikramya brahman brahmastram sandate.
Sri Sutta Goswami said, hearing this from the personality of Godhead, Arjuna touched water for purification, and after circumambulating Lord Krishna, he cast his Brahmastra weapon to counteract the other one.
Samhatyan yonyamuvayas tejasi sarasambhrite avritya rodasi kamcha bhavridhate kabhanivad.
When the rays of the two Brahmastras combined, a great circle of fire, like the disk of the sun, covered all outer space and the whole firmament of planets. And here in the purport, Prabhupada said, the atomic bomb can utmost blow up one globe, but the heat produced by the Brahmastra can destroy the whole cosmic manifestation. Comparison is therefore made to the heat at the time of annihilation.
Trisrastra tejas tutayas triyalokan pradatan mahat ayamana prajasarva samvartakam amamsita.
All the population of the three worlds was scorched by the combined heat of the weapon. Everyone was reminded of the samvartaka fire which takes place at the time of annihilation. So this is how powerful it was. Prabhupada in the purport makes, because everyone was scorched, there's no planet without living beings in the human being. Nitya sarva gata stan in Bhagavad Gita. Living entities are everywhere.
Prajopa dravyam alaksha loka vyati karam chitam matam cha vasudevasya sanjahara juno dvayam.
Thus seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons, as Lord Sri Krishna desired. So here in the purport, Prabhupada makes a point that foolish people think that the modern atomic bomb can destroy the world. And Prabhupada makes two points, that it's not powerful enough, and ultimately, it depends on the will of the Lord. So by the will of the Lord and the will of his devotee, it was retracted. So only his will is supreme, Krishna's will. Nothing's independent.
Tatta asadya tarasa dharanam gotami sutam bhavantamasa tam raksha pashum rashanayayata.
Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal. So Sridhar Swami, the commentator, says, this is Shastra. He's duty-bound to treat him like an animal, even though he was born in a Brahmin family because of the abominable action, because he was so degraded. And he degraded himself to a lower status of life. And it was proper, therefore, to treat him as an animal and not a Brahmin.
Shiviraya naninshantam rajva badva rupum balat paharjunam pakupito bhagavan ambu jekshana.
After binding Ashvatthama, Arjuna wanted to take him to the military camp. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, looking on with his lotus eyes, spoke to angry Arjuna. So Arjuna's eyes were described like blazing, in like two red balls of copper. And Krishna was angry, but his eyes were described as lotus. And it just shows that everything that Krishna does is transcendental. It's not the modes of nature. It's only a sign of his bent of mind towards the cause of his devotee. That is his transcendental nature. So his eyes were angry. But he was looking with lotus eyes. And that's because even his anger is a symptom of love. And therefore it has a different effect. He's unchanged in all circumstances.
Mainam partha hasi tratum brahma bhanduni mam jahi yasavanagasa saptam avadi nishavalakam.
Lord Sri Krishna said, O Arjuna, you should not show mercy by releasing this innocent relative of a Brahmin, Brahma Bhandu, for he has killed innocent boys in their sleep. So, Lord Krishna again also. And the point is there, it's birthright. It's determined not by birthright, by qualification. Therefore, even though he's a Brahmin, he's called Brahma Bhandu, a friend of a Brahmin. He knows a Brahmin. He's not actually a Brahmin because of his actions. And Prabhupada also said that when we become devotees, we become better than Goswamis. When we actually become Vaishnavas, this is the principle of Krishna consciousness. But he said, if we stop following the principles, are we still better than a Goswami? Depends on our actions.
Patam pramatam unmatam suktam balam siyam jadam papanam vritam vitam narupam hanti dharmavit.
A person who knows the principles of religion does not kill an enemy who is careless, intoxicated, insane, asleep, afraid, or devoid of his chariot, nor does he kill a boy, a woman, a foolish creature, or a surrendered soul. So previously war was fought according to principles. Everyone knew that Dharma would make one happy. Righteousness would make one happy. Therefore, no one acted expediently in a Vedic culture. They always did what was right. So even in war, there were no war crimes. They played according to the rules. They didn't try to do something extra to win. They tried to do what's right, and they fought their hardest. So Ashwatthama did not follow the proper principles, and he's condemned.
Svapranam ya parapranai prapushnat yagrinakala tadvadastasya hi seyo yadoshadyatyadapuman.
A cruel and wretched person who maintains his existence at the cost of others' lives deserves to be killed for his own well-being, otherwise he will go down by his own action. So a life for a life is good. Because if someone kills someone and the king gives the reaction of killing him, then that person is alleviated from sinful reaction. So this is mana. This capital punishment is a proper thing. People are afraid of capital punishment because they think that the end of the body is the end of existence. But actually it will help someone. And therefore Prabhupada also in the purport talks about not only human beings, but when you kill animals, how sinful. You have to be punished. There's also be a life for life when you kill animals. Prabhupada mentions the conspirators who kill animals. He who gives permission, he who kills the animal, he who sells the slaughtered animal, he who cooks the animal, he who administers distribution of the food stuff, and at last he who eats such cooked animal food are all murderers, and all of them are liable to be punished by the laws of nature.
Pati shrutam cha bhavata panchalya shrinvato mama darishye shirastasya yaste manani putraha.
Furthermore, I have personally heard you promise Draupadi that you would bring forth the head of the killer of her sons.
Tadasa vajitam papa atata yatma banduha vartuscha vipriyam vira kritavan kula pamshana.
This man is an assassin and murderer of your own family members. Not only that, but he has also dissatisfied his master. He is but the burnt remnants of his family. Kill him immediately. See, he's degraded by the acts that he performed.
Sutta uvacha evam parikshita dharmam partha krishnena chodita naicha dantum guru sutam yadyapyatma hanam maham.
Sutta Goswami said, although Krishna, who is examining Arjuna in religion, encouraged Arjuna to kill the son of Dronacharya, Arjuna, a great soul, did not like the idea of killing him, although Ashvatthama was a heinous murderer of Arjuna's family members. So, Arjuna was a great soul, so he's very compassionate, and the Lord is actually testing him. Because it's not so simple. Still, the son represents the father. So a test reveals what your best is and is a measuring standard of what your best is, and it also increases your desire and effort to become the best. So often the Lord puts tests before one, especially when the one is a teacher. He has to test his student to gauge his level of advancement so he can instruct him accordingly. So there's always tests, just like the gopis were put to test. Their love for Krishna was put to test. When they came to the forest, Krishna said, oh, it's not proper for young girls to be alone in the middle of the night. Go back. So their love was tested. So it got them a chance to show their love and also to gauge their own love.
Atopetya sasibiram govinda priya sarati Navedyatam priyaya sochantya atmajam hatam.
After reaching his own camp, Arjuna, along with his dear friend and charioteer Sri Krishna, entrusted the murderer unto his dear wife, who is lamenting for her murdered son. So Govinda Priya Sarathi, his dear friend and charioteer Govinda.
Tataratam pashuvat pashuvadam avan mukam karma jugupsitena nariksha krishna pakritam gorosutam nariksha krishna pakritam gorosutam. Vamasvabhava kripaya nanamicha.
Sutta Goswami said, Draupadi then saw Ashvatthama, who was bound with ropes like an animal and silent for having enacted the most inglorious murder. Due to her female nature and due to her being naturally good and well-behaved, she showed him due respect as a Brahmin. The specific words used in this shloka are Vama Svabhava, mild and gentle by nature. A good man, a woman, accepts everything very mildly, but a man of average intelligence does not do so. But anyway, we should not give up our reason and discriminatory power just to be gentle. One must have good discriminatory power to judge things on its merit. We should not follow the mild nature of woman and therefore accept that which is genuine. In other words, the woman's heart is good. It's good to have a soft heart. But based on a soft heart, you shouldn't lose your discriminatory powers. Just like Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he did not want to fight, so he was praised for his soft heart. But when your soft heart overshadows your discrimination, then that's not good. That's foolish and is condemned.
Uvacha cha sahantyasya bandana nanyanansati Muchyatam muchyatam esha brahmano nitaram guru.
She could not tolerate Ashvatthama is being bound by ropes, and being a devoted lady, she said, release him, for he is a Brahmin of our spiritual master. So it just shows again that her kindness, Draupadi's kindness, and it's the kindness is characteristics of a pure devotee. But still, the injunction is there. A teacher, a spiritual master, is liable to be rejected if he proves himself unworthy of the position of guru, spiritual master. So Ashvatthama failed in his duty, and on this consideration, it was right that he was condemned. But Draupadi's heart is overpowering her shastric vision. So she'll give her arguments. This is very interesting. Sarahasyo danur veda savisargo pasamyama astagramascha bhavata sikshito yaranugrahat. It was by Dronacharya's mercy that you learned the military art of throwing arrows and the confidential art of controlling weapons. So who is Dronacharya, James?
Dronacharya is the...
He's the father of Ashvatthama. And he's the guru of Arjuna. So, the next verses will just give Draupadi's reasons. Okay? And we'll go back to them. Sa'esha Bhagavan Drona Prajarupena Vartate Tasyatmano Dampatyasti Nanvagad Virashukrati. He, Dronacharya, is certainly still existing, being represented by his son. His wife, Kripi, did not undergo a sati with him because she had a son. So when Dronacharya was killed, his wife, Kripi, did not undergo sati. Generally, the wife undergoes sati because the pain of separation from the husband, this is in ancient times and women were trained in chastity, the pain of separation from the husband was less painful than the pain of the fire. And she would get the same destination as her husband. So she did not undergo it. Why? Because she had a son. So she's arguing that the son is still present. Dronacharya, their guru, is still present in the form of the son. He should not be killed. Tadharma gya mahabhaga bhavadvir gauravam kulam vijinam naharti praptum pujam vandyam abhikshnasa. O most fortunate one who knows the principles of religion, it is not good for you to cause grief to glorious family members who are always respectable and worshipable. So, right? You know this, James, right? A cultured man should always be careful in dealing with worshipable family members. A slight insult for respectable family is sufficient to invoke grief. This is the Vedic system also. You know, you can see the remnants of cultures in other cultures. But they have the culture without the proper objectives and understanding of the culture. So therefore, the rituals become a little bit meaningless. Marudirasya janani gautami pati devata yataha mritya vatsarta rodim yashru mukhi muhu. My lord, do not make the wife of Dronacharya cry like me. I am aggrieved for the death of my sons. She need not cry constantly like me. Yai kopitam brahmakulam rajanyai ajatatmavi tatkulam pradatyashu sanubandhum sacharpitam. If the kingly administrative order being unrestricted in sense control offends the Brahmin order and enrages them, then the fire of that rage burns up the whole body of the royal family and brings grief upon all. That's Draupadi's arguments. Now, Sutta Goswami is going to sum them up. Okay? Sutta uvacha dharmyam yayam
shakarunam nivyalikam shamam mahat rajadharma suto ragya pratyana dhad vachod vija.
Sutta Goswami said, O Brahmanas, King Yudhisthira fully supported the statements of the queen, which are in accordance with the principles of religion and were justified, glorious, full of mercy and equity and without duplicity. So if you look at the arguments, her arguments were so expert. 43 was her piety. She was a devoted lady. She could not tolerate Ashvatthama being bound. Text 44 was her reasonable, they were justified. So she gave her reasons that they learned the military science from Dronacharya. Text 45 was her mercifulness, and her arguments were glorious. So this was her mercifulness. She described how the sun is still existing in the guru is still existing in his son Ashvatthama, and 47 was the argument of what's mentioned here, equity, samam, equity. What was the equity? Well, I suffered, why should she suffer? That's 47. And 48 was her arguments without duplicity. And based on good qualities, her greatness. So because her reasoning was based on such good qualities, everyone agreed. In other words, there was such sincerity behind her reasoning that everyone agreed.
Nakula sahadevascha yuyudhano dananjaya bhagavan devaki putro ye chanya yascha yoshita.
Nakula and Sahadev, the younger brothers of the king, and also Satyaki, Arjuna, personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, son of Devaki, and the ladies and others all unanimously agreed with the king. So Nakula, one of the Pandavas, was famous for being wise, and Sahadev, famous for being learned.
Tattaha marshito bhimas tasya shreyan vidasmita nabartu natmanas charte Yohan Suptam Shishumbrita.
Bhima, however, disagreed with them and recommended killing this culprit, who in an angry mood had murdered sleeping children for no purpose and for neither his nor his master's interest. So even Diodna didn't agree. It wasn't even favorable for Diodna.
Nishamya Bhima Gaditam Draupadyascha Chaturbhuja Alokya Vadanam Shakyur Idamaha Hashaniva.
Chaturbhuj, the four-armed one, or the personality of God, after hearing the words of Bhima, Draupadi, and others, saw the face of his dear friend Arjuna and began to speak as if smiling. So he was called Chaturbhuj, four-armed, although it's Krishna. So it's described by Sridhar Swami why he has four arms, because Bhima and Draupadi held opposing views, and Bhima wanted, and they, so in order to prevent both of them, the Lord discovered another two arms. Originally, the primeval Lord Krishna only has two arms, but in his Narayan feature, he has four. So what's the harm? Sridhar Swami says if he's called Chaturbhuja, there's no contradiction. When he showed the Vishwarupa, he displayed thousands of arms.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Brahma Bandur Nahantavya Attatayi Vidardana Mayova Bayam Atma Atnat amnatam paripayanushasanam kuru prati sutam satyam yattat san vayata priyam priyam chabhima senasya panchaya mayame vaja.
Translation: the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna said, a friend of a Brahmin is not to be killed, but if he is an aggressor, he must be killed. All these rulings are in the scriptures, and you should act accordingly. You have to fulfill your promise to your wife, and you must also act for the satisfaction of Bhima Sen and me. So we're saying kill him. Your wife says don't. So how will you adjust this?
Suta uvacha Arjuna sahasa gyaya hare harda matasina manim jahara murdhanyam dvijasya sahamurdhajam.
Just then Arjuna could understand the mode of the Lord by his equivocal orders, and thus with his sword he severed both hair and jewel from the head of Ashvatthama. So this settled it. He was killed and not killed, because this was insulting him. So this was the proper punishment.
Vamucha rasanam bandham balahatya hata prabhum tejasam anina hinam sabiram nirayapayat.
He, Ashvatthama, has already lost his bodily luster due to infanticide. And now, moreover, having lost the jewel from his head, he lost even more strength. Thus he was unbound and driven out of the camp.
Papanam javanadanam stanam niryapanam tata eshahi brahmabandhunam padhunan yostadhaihika.
Cutting the hair from his head, depriving him of his wealth, and driving him from his residence are the prescribed punishments for the relative of Brahman. There is no injunction for killing the body.
Bhuta shokatura sarve pandava saha krishnaya swanam ritanam yatkritam chakra niharanadikam.
Thereafter the sons of Pandu and Draupadi, overwhelmed with grief, perform the proper rituals for the dead bodies of their relatives. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, seventh chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Son of Drona Punished. You know, before we finish this class, James, let's see if we have time. It's the end of the tape. Just to read the purport to 48, because text 48 shows how Draupadi's reasoning was based on such qualities that everyone agreed. And I described how her arguments between 43 and 47 demonstrate all the qualities in text 48 that Suta Goswami describes it, that Yudhisthira accepted the statements of the queens because of the great qualities that were behind her arguments. So let's see if we have time for the purport. If we don't, Maharaj Yudhisthira was the son of Dharmaraj or Yamaraj, fully supported the words of Queen Draupadi in asking Arjuna to release Ashvatthama. One should not tolerate the humiliation of a member of a great family. Arjuna's family were indebted to the family of Dronacharya because of Arjuna's learning the military science from him. If ingratitude were shown to such a benevolent family, it would not be at all justified from the moral standpoint. The wife of Dronacharya, who was the half-body of the great soul, must be treated with compassion, and she should not be put into grief because of her son's death. That is compassion. Such statements by Draupadi are without duplicity, because action should be taken with full knowledge. The feeling of equality was there because Draupadi spoke out of her personal experience. A barren woman cannot understand the grief of a mother. Draupadi was herself a mother, and therefore her calculation of the depth of Kripi's grief was quite to the point. It was glorious because she wanted to show proper respect to a great family. So that was verse 48. It was glorious. She wanted to show respect to a great family. If it offends a Brahmin, then the fire of that rage burns up the whole body of the royal family. So very expertly we see Draupadi's very saintly qualities. Okay, we can end here. Are there any questions, James?
No.
Okay.